You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome to Sweet FA, a football podcast brought to you by Last Word on Sport. I'm Rob Mitchell and with me as always is Hugo Jennings. How are you doing, Hugo?
I'm very well, Rob. How are you?
I'm good. It's Champions League week, and as such, we are asking the question, can the four English representatives challenge the super clubs of Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich? These are the guys at the end of every tournament we've seen recently, are there or thereabouts. They're the guys challenging, they're the guys winning the tournament. And can the English teams realistically challenge? So we'll go through them one by one, and we'll start with the champions, Leicester. Hugo, can Leicester challenge these clubs for the Champions League title?
Well, obviously in terms of quality on the pitch, Leicester, as impressive as they were last season, don't look capable of competing with those big clubs. But considering that in the knockout stages, the Champions League is just over two legs. It's not like a league season where they have to compete with them over 38 games. There's no reason why any club couldn't realistically do it. Leicester would have to play absolutely out of their skin, but such, particularly with the away goals rule involved, they basically have to not concede at home, and then anything's possible from there. So obviously Leicester are nowhere near the other clubs in terms of the quality of their squad. That kind of goes without saying. But were Leicester to come up against Barcelona, Real Madrid or Bayern Munich, considering what's happened in the past in English football with inferior English teams beating those kinds of teams, there's no reason why they couldn't. It's entirely unlikely, but if they approached the two games in the right way, they could very easily do it. It's only two matches. It's not like they're having to play them five times or something. They should be able to do it if they approach it in the right way.
Yeah, and Leicester's middle name is, after the last year, is unlikely. They beat the odds over the course of the season to become champions, so you certainly can't rule them out. But as you say, player for player, if we just take last year's Champions League winners, Real Madrid, they can't corner the likes of a Ronaldo. And then after that, Real Madrid still have got your Gareth Bales, your Benzemas, your Toni Kroos, your James Rodriguez. And I'm only just starting there. You can carry on forever. The same comes of Barcelona. You've got your Messis, your Neymars, and all the other star-studded players, and Bayern are the same. So yeah, they don't have the marquee names there, but they proved last year they go toe to toe with the top teams in the Premier League when everybody gave them no hope whatsoever.
Yeah, the key thing to take into account is that it is kind of a cup tie format. So as we've seen in the FA Cup just a couple of years ago, Bradford City winning from coming back from 2-0 down to beat Chelsea, who were the champions elect at that time, at Stamford Bridge. Football's a very spontaneous thing. Anything can happen at any moment. And so Leicester could beat those kinds of teams over two legs. They have shown, as you said, that they are capable of beating anyone in England. So there's no reason why they couldn't replicate that in Europe. It won't happen because they'll kind of go into the matches expecting to lose, perhaps. And once teams like Barcelona get early goals, they're able to steamroll teams. Mm. But the reason why Barcelona, Bayern Munich in particular, are so dominant in La Liga is not because the teams in it are terrible. Team for team, the quality of La Liga is possibly higher than the Premier League at the moment, even right down the bottom end. There haven't been many teams in La Liga who are as bad as Aston Villa were last season, for example. It's just that these, you know, perfectly strong teams, when they come up against Barcelona and Real Madrid, they kind of just bend over for them. They just expect to lose, and they get smashed because of it. Whereas sometimes, when as happened with Barcelona at home to Alaves, it was at the weekend. Barcelona played a slightly weakened side, but still a very good one, had a lot of good players in it. but Alaves kind of showed a bit of belief, and they managed to pull off an unlikely 2-1 win at Hercules, won at the Nou Camp a few years ago as well. It's just a simple matter of mentality in those kind of games. It's obviously, in terms of the things that you can measure, a bit easier, like ability, which you can kind of look at more easily. Obviously, Barcelona are the stronger side, but when you look at the intangibles, like mentality, that's where you can win one-off matches.
Yeah. Obviously, Leicester have got a reasonable group. We think they've got a good chance of going through. However, once they get to that knockout stage and they start getting the marquee ties, they get the Juventuses, they get the teams which play Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, teams like this, is there the danger of it being, oh, it's great to be here sort of thing? We've got to this stage, it's a great away day for the fans, and the players almost get sucked into that feel as well, thinking we're lucky to be here.
Exactly, and they have kind of thought of it that way as well already. They're just excited to be getting all these kind of European away days at teams even like Porto. But they have got a pretty easy group. They should be able to beat those teams, and if they top their group, which will require they'll have to play well to beat Porto, obviously. But if they top that group, that should mean an easier opposition in the last 16. It doesn't always work out like that. So then suddenly they're in the quarter final, perhaps. Anyway, obviously that's getting ahead of ourselves a bit, but say they get there. And the way they should approach it is, isn't it great to be here? We're playing against Barcelona or whatever. The actual way they should be approaching is, hang on, we're four games away from the Champions League final here. That's the mentality they've got to go into it with. And they do run the risk of just being self-satisfied. But then again, they could have just been satisfied with shoring up the Champions League places last year, and they didn't do that. So it's just, at that point, it becomes up to Ranieri to make sure they don't just kind of get starstruck, and they realise, hang on, if we play these four games the right way, we're in the Champions League final. That's how you've got to look at it from then on.
Yeah, he's got to keep the players focused and make sure they realise they've earned this and they deserve to be there, which, as champions of this country, they do.
Exactly. And the other point is that, these guys are playing, when they go to Barcelona and teams like that, they're playing against the same people in their profession. So if you come across people like Messi is godlike in his footballing ability, but you can't get overawed by that. He's the same as you. He's in the same profession as you. And if you're going to just get overawed by someone who is in the same profession as you, albeit at a higher level, perhaps it's the wrong profession for you. So Leicester cannot get starstruck. It would just be a crying shame, because this may be their only opportunity to play in Europe. So if they just spend it like a kind of a holiday or a tour or something, then they will have wasted their chance.
Yeah, I mean, the other factor that comes in is the juggling of European football with their league and domestic cup commitments, something that a lot of these players haven't really had to do. A few of the younger players, like Danny Drinkwater and Danny Simpson, have seen it while at Manchester United. But players like Jamie Vardy, never been at a club in Europe before. How can Ranieri make sure his squad can cope?
Well, firstly, Leicester did quite well to boost their squad in the transfer window, but we've done transfers to death a bit on this podcast, so people can listen to what we have to say just by looking through previous episodes. But so that was the first step, obviously, was that they've got a much deeper squad than they have last year, even though they lost Kante. So that was an important step. And next, I suppose, it becomes a matter of priority, really, because Leicester, with the quality they have, should be well clear of anything dramatic like relegation. Who knows, they could be in contention for the European places again, so that might make it a bit more difficult. But hypothetically, if Leicester were in the knockout rounds of the Champions League and they didn't really look like mounting a serious title challenge or a top four challenge or anything. In terms of priority, would it be worth Ranieri just risking it and starting to keep his strongest 11 fit for the knockout games and just ignoring the Premier League? If obviously not if they're in contention for anything special again. So the way to keep his squad fit is a rotation, which they didn't have to do last year, so that would be a big change, but they've got the squad to do that now. And B, do they just accept a few bad results in the Premier League if it means they can go further in Europe? Which I think it would be, considering they may not get many other chances to play in the Champions League.
Yeah, we may see the return of Ranieri to a former alias, the Tinker Man.
Yes, exactly. Which he didn't have to tinker very much at all last season.
No.
But this year he can, and yes, it'll be interesting to see if he can live up to that reputation again, because that could be the secret to a long run of the Champions League. And because of the way the draw's been quite kind to them so far, they should be able to go quite far in it, because getting an easy group should mean that you get an easiest passage into the quarter final, and then from there anything's possible. So Leicester should really be taking this opportunity.
Yeah, we'll move on now to last year's second place team, and that's Arsenal. To sort of look behind the curtain, Hugo is actually transmitting from France for us today, because he's just been to PSG versus Arsenal. And I think my biggest question is, can Arsenal sort of get over the hump of the round of 16, which they seem to have been stuck on for the last few years?
Yes, I suppose the context I can put this in is, a few podcasts ago, we spoke about Arsene Wenger, and everyone who knows me, who knows my work, who knows my tweets, whatever, will be aware of how much I love Arsene Wenger and how much I try to defend him. But one area in which he's been pretty indefensible in his Arsenal career is in Europe. There was that brilliant run to the Champions League in 2006, where the team, despite being shocking at times in the league, got to the final and deserved to win it. There was the semi-final in 2009, which was a really impressive achievement. But beyond that, it's just been one-off matches that Arsenal have performed well in, and not much else.
And normally, when the tie is almost out of sight from the first leg, as well. I remember Bayern Munich, you guys went there and absolutely hammered them, but unfortunately they'd already hammered you first in London.
And that tie is quite important in one of my points, because the key thing in the Champions League knockout stage is the away goals rule. Arsene Wenger's complained about it a lot. Perhaps it shouldn't be there. I think it's quite a good way to settle ties, because, you know, it's if a team scores more away goals, it's harder to score away from home, supposedly. So that's for another podcast, though. So, but the away goals rule is there, and Arsenal just never take advantage of it. Mm. So you've got, obviously, the most important thing, if you're not the best team in the Champions League, the way to go far in it is by not conceding. When Arsenal reached the final in 2006, they went 995 minutes without conceding. So that meant that over four matches, they didn't concede against Juventus and Real Madrid. They defended for their lives in those matches. So that's what Arsenal need to start doing, just approaching games a bit more defensively against a stronger opposition. But at home, you've got to kind of be careful of, it's got to be a case of damage limitation. And every year that Arsenal have gone out in the last 16 in recent years, or nearly every year anyway, I mean, if you look at the first year that they went out, they were playing a much better team in Barcelona, who were one of the best teams of all time, and they managed to beat them at home, and they lost very, very, they were quite unlucky because of the Van Persie red card, and Bentner missed a big chance towards the end that would have taken them through. So that's not important. The year after that was the tie was over after the 4-0 at Milan, and they very nearly came back from that. But in each of the years since, Arsenal have just shot themselves in the foot by when towards the end of the match, Arsenal have been losing, but only by one goal, so they can go away from home and easily overturn that deficit. They've still gone forward and put everyone forward trying to get the equaliser and then conceded again. So the year that they won 2-0 in the Allianz Arena, they lost 3-1 at home and then went out on away goal. Arsenal brought it back from 2-0 to 2-1 and committed too many men forward and conceded a late third, which meant that it was game over. The year after, Arsenal played Bayern Munich again. They were only 1-0 down with not long to go. And then they got themselves a free kick quite high up the pitch and brought everyone forward for that and then gave the ball away stupidly and allowed Bayern to get the ball back. And then they scored a long shot to make it 2-0 and that put them out of the tie because it's very hard to win by two goals at the Allianz Arena. Although that the year before. The year after that was the Monaco tie, which is probably one of the worst performances Arsenal have put in under Arsene Wenger in the home match, where they went 2-0 down through again, putting too many people forward. And then they brought it back in injury time to 2-1, which meant that they were going to go through because they kicked them by two or more goals at Monaco. And then they just let Monaco through to score the third and won 2-0 away again and went out on away goal. There's a bit of a pattern emerging here. So if in those games Arsenal have kind of, you know, thought about damage limitation and just thought, OK, we are just going to take the one goal deficit here and then go gung-ho in the away leg, which they could have easily done. Perhaps we could now be talking about some deeper runs into Europe. Or even if at the start they just said, right, we are just not going to concede in this home game. If in the Monaco game they just made sure that they did not concede, even a 0-0 draw, they would have cruised through to the quarterfinal. And then, as I said, from there, it's four matches. Who knows? Monaco drew Juventus in the quarterfinal. They're a very good team. Yeah, but who knows? Arsenal could have gone even further. And so it's just this immaturity every single year that prevents Arsenal from going about it. And obviously, the other problem historically has been that, which has now stopped because Arsenal usually have at least one better team than them in their group. But in the group, they win all their first three matches and are sort of cruising through. And then they take their foot off the gas, drop city points and get second in the group. It's all about topping that group so that you can get someone easier in the last 16, as I was talking about with Leicester. That was their other problem. There have been so many years where they should have topped their group but have just not taken the final game seriously enough and played silly teams that stopped them topping the group. So Arsenal really have been the architects of their own downfall. Obviously, with the lack of funds that they had in the stadium, it would be very hard to compete with Europe's best. But if you look at some of the team over the years that have gone far in Europe, you know, Apoel Nicosia made the quarter final. Teams have won the damn thing. So if you look at that, that's not an excuse. If they just approach the games defensively and with the right mentality, they could have easily gone much further almost every year than they have.
Yeah, looking at this year's group, Paris Saint-Germain stand out as the big sort of barrier to topping the group. You saw the game this week. What were your thoughts on the two sides? Obviously, there's the draw, but can Arsenal top this group?
Well,
and
after
will
that
they?
Result,
there's a different. That's a different. there's two questions.
Well, so
there.
To kind of go in between those two, I suppose, because of last night's result, Arsenal should top their group. There's no excuse not to now. Because, so as for the match itself, when Arsenal went 1-0 down so early on, I thought it was going to be a massacre. I thought they'd capitulate and PSG would just thrash them. They could have done, but for the heroics of Big Dave Ospina and the embarrassment of Edinson Cavani. But then Arsenal came out fighting in the second half. They showed some spirit. They approached the game in the right way. They should be approaching all Champions League games against better opposition like that, where even if they go 1-0 down, they just consolidate. They make sure that they don't go even further down, and then they fight for that equaliser. That was really good. But because of that result now, Arsenal have got four matches against Basel and Ludogorets, and then the home tie against PSG. There's absolutely no excuse not to get 12 points from Basel-Ludogorets. What Arsenal have to do is keep a clean sheet at home to PSG, and they top the group. Now, it's hard to keep clean sheets against PSG, obviously. They're a very, very good attacking side. They've got one of the best, if not the best, fielders in the world in Marco Verratti, connecting their whole team together. And then God only knows how many attacking outlets beyond him. But if Arsenal just bounce around against Basel and Ludogorets and just get the 12 points, no playing, just playing the strongest team and just steamrolling them in those matches, and then they defend for their lives against PSG and try to get either a 0-0 draw, scrape 1-0 win or whatever, then they top the group. And then who knows what can happen from there. But also, what I will say is, heaped praise on PSG. Arsenal were able to match them for 45 minutes of that game and possibly more. They looked like they could easily have had the better of them on another day. And now this will be very difficult to beat them. But Arsenal, they showed a lot more spirit than PSG in the second half, and they started to outplay them at times. If Arsenal can repeat a performance at that level, they will require Xhaka playing instead of Coquelin, for example. But if Arsenal can keep that level of performance up to 90 minutes, there is absolutely no reason why they can't beat PSG at home. So, as I said, because of that result, Arsenal have no excuse not to top the group this year.
Yeah, we'll move on to the third place team in Arsenal's North London rivals, Spurs. Back in the Champions League after a couple of years away, they're looking forward to it. They're playing against Monaco tonight when we're recording, so that we don't actually know that result yet. But the big thing for them, they're playing at Wembley. Now, Arsenal have had mixed experience of playing their Champions League games away from home to get a bigger audience. Can Spurs make it work?
Yeah, it's a shame, really, that they're not playing Champions League games at the Lane. There's a romance to playing Champions League games at older stadiums, really, but that's not important. Arsenal, the Wembley experiment didn't really work out for Arsenal, and they did end up going back to playing them at Highbury. I think, though, that for Spurs, playing at Wembley garners a real excitement for them. And I don't mean that in a kind of talking them down kind of way. But it seems to me, judging by the reactions on social media, that there's a real buzz around the Spurs fans.
Okay, so we'll now move on to Arsenal's North London rival, the team that finished third, Tottenham Hotspur. And I suppose the biggest question for me in their return to Champions League football after a couple of years away, since they were last in it, is potentially games at Wembley. Can they work where Arsenal didn't quite succeed when they tried it in the late 90s?
Yes, the Wembley experiment didn't really work out for Arsenal. It just kind of felt like playing away from home, really. And I do think it's a shame that Tottenham aren't playing at White Hart Lane. There is kind of a romance for English clubs playing Champions League games at proper football grounds, but that's not important. I think it could work better for Spurs just because they, judging by social media, there seems to be a bit more of an excitement about it amongst them. I don't mean that in a kind of patronising way. It's just that in the 90s, before the Wembley experiment happened, Arsenal played a lot at Wembley. And certainly with the new Wembley, it's soulless a bit. It's not that nice a ground. It's not that convenient to get to. So kind of miserable Arsenal fans like me might not enjoy the trip as much. But the Spurs fans on social media seem to be really excited about it. They'll probably create more of an atmosphere. I think what will also help them is that although the tickets did go on general element, it's sold out amongst the true fan base, so it doesn't seem like it seems to have attracted too many tourists, which could help. So in terms of the atmosphere, that'll help. So yeah, it's a difficult one really to work out. I suppose we'll have to see what happens. The huge advantage that Tottenham have is they've got an incredibly easy group. So those three matches at Wembley shouldn't really need a great crowd atmosphere or whatever to win them. They should just be able to win them by virtue of being a far better team than the likes of CSKA and Moscow. So I suppose it'll only come in the later rounds that we'll see whether it's a hindrance or not. Certainly, if the Arsenal attempt at playing at the old Wembley was anything to go by, it won't be as good as playing at White Hart Lane. But they shouldn't have too much trouble, because they seem to be a lot more positive about it than Arsenal were in the 1990s.
Obviously, their last Champions League experience was fairly successful. They got through to the quarterfinals. The performances of Gareth Bale in that competition actually earned him his world record move to Real Madrid. Can they replicate that form and go deeper this time?
Well, yes, the favourable draw means that they should be getting to the quarterfinals again. Obviously, that who knows, if they top the group and draw Dortmund, they may have some trouble getting there. But again, so if they are able to get to the quarterfinals, or even if they do come up against a good team in the last 16, there's a lot of quality in that side, particularly Harry Kane. He'll be the most important thing, because in a kind of knockout style competition, someone who can score goals out of nothing is just priceless. But I think that Tottenham, they should be able to approach games in the way that they're able to beat good opposition. Under Pochettino, their performances, particularly at home actually, against the bigger teams has dramatically improved, as is shown by the 5-3 against Chelsea, the 3-0 against United, and the 4-1 against City, all since Pochettino joined. So the Spurs of under, say, Villas-Boas, obviously they're a much weaker squad, but they probably would have been rolled over by someone like Barcelona, but perhaps they will be able to achieve more of a miracle with the group of players they have. But again, it will be a case of all of their players firing on all cylinders, and most important of all, whether Harry Kane can garner some kind of scoring hot streak in that competition.
He's been there. I mean, the additions Mourinho Pochettino has made will also help. The addition of Janssen as a support for Harry Kane should also take the pressure off him to be the only outlet for goals.
Exactly, and in terms of the investment into the squad, a bit like Leicester, they'll be able to deal with the strains of playing in Europe a lot better. Obviously, they were in the Europa League last year, but they weren't taking it very seriously. And last season's squad would have struggled with Champions League and Premier League football. And now they've got a slightly deeper squad, particularly the addition of Wanyama's back up to Dier, and with Janssen as back up to Kane, and Nkudu as well. So they've got a much deeper squad, and they'll be able to deal with the strain of it a lot better. And the fact that they've got a very, very easy group to deal with means that they won't be taxed too much in the early stages. So Tottenham are very well set up at the moment for a long run in the Champions League, but it just depends on what happens when
Could
they come up against the stronger
impact
teams.
Their league form? Obviously, they went third last year. A lot of the fans and probably players think they probably should have been second, at least. If not, they did have a chance. They were Leicester's biggest challenger for a long time. Will it sustain around the Champions League? Maybe let them fall behind teams that don't have or won't be taking their European competition as seriously, potentially, like Manchester United and Chelsea, who are looking to regain their status as Champions League sides?
Well, I think what will impact on Tottenham's league form much more than the Champions League is the fact that Chelsea, Manchester United and Manchester City are much better teams this year. I don't think anyone could argue that Tottenham are as good as Manchester United and Manchester City in particular this season. So that will make things a lot more difficult. And so that's much more important in terms of keeping in the top four places. As for the Champions League, certainly in the group stages, they should be able to manage playing against the teams that they've been drawn against for those 6 weeks, along with the Premier League. Obviously, when it gets to the knockout stages, if they're playing some good sides, then yeah, there'll be a bit of a strain on them. But they shouldn't be using that as excuse anyway. Because, I mean, for example, today they're playing Monaco, who, you know, are a good side, but not as good as they once were. And then they've got a four-day break before they play Sunderland. So they should not be this should not be a strain on them. Obviously, there's a trip to Russia before they have to play at home to Manchester City. But if you want to compete with the big boys, then you've got to be able to deal with things like that. So they shouldn't let let playing in Europe affect them, they should embrace it, really.
I don't believe it's in Russia, but Man City will have a Champions League game that week as well, so it's not a total disadvantage to be playing that week.
Exactly, and so they shouldn't be using that excuse. They should be embracing the fact that A, they're in the Champions League, B, they've got a very easy group, and C, that they've got a much deeper squad than last year. So they shouldn't have any problems. It's just a case of competing with Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea and Arsenal. That's more important in terms of the league.
As we've brought up Manchester City, we'll move on to them, the fourth and final English team in the Champions League this year. They got through the qualifying, and their award was one of the super clubs that we've been talking about, and can they challenge in Barcelona in their group. Now, obviously, it's a bit different with Manchester City compared to the others, because they have a man that knows a lot about Barcelona in Pep Guardiola, who obviously led them to some of their greatest nights in their history. So can Pep get his Manchester City team to beat Barcelona in this group stage?
The difference, I think, between Manchester City, Arsenal, and Arsenal, Tottenham and Leicester is that I'd struggle to see this with Arsenal, in all honesty, but they have produced it at times. This Manchester City squad are not going to beat Barcelona by putting in some like Atletico Madrid-style backs-to-the-wall defensive performance, not looking at the defence they have. They're going to beat one of these teams by matching them and outplaying them in the way that Arsenal kind of matched Barcelona when they beat them 2-1 at home in 2011. So they're not going to be able to defend their way to success against those teams, and it will be a case of whether they can match them. And if the likes of De Bruyne, and particularly, obviously, it kind of goes without saying, side, perhaps if some of Barcelona's players don't turn up, then maybe they can compete with them. So Manchester City are kind of the interesting entity of the English teams, because if they're going to beat one of the big teams, it will be by playing sensationally. Whereas with Leicester, you'd imagine it would be with a really heroic defensive performance, for example. So certainly they will be able to get second in their group, because they're comfortably the second best. I suppose it's a case of whether the team is ready for these kind of challenges only so early on in the Guardiola era. We've no changes that he's implemented in terms of tactics, in terms of training and whatever else at the team. So it'll be interesting to see if they're ready to gel together and come together as a unit to be able to beat that kind of team.
You bring up a good point. Is this a bit early for Manchester City to be challenging those super clubs, in the sense of the Pep Guardiola's project, in terms of how he's going to reshape that team and his image? He's brought in the players, but it'll take them a year to gel. Are we going to see a much more determined and ready to compete at that level Manchester City in 12 months' time, where the likes of Gundogan, Sane, John Stones are all bedded in with the established names of De Bruyne, Aguero, Vincent Kompany, and they really go at them? And we'll bring a couple of other teams. You look at, in the same way that they're not in the Champions League this year, so they won't, but the Manchester United of Jose Mourinho and the Chelsea of Antonio Conte will have had a year to develop before they go up against these sides. Are these three teams going to come into next year's Champions League and say, especially with the likes of Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid not being able to buy anyone before they play them next year, and should these three teams qualify again next year, they really could be challenging the super clubs in a totally different way with the financial backing the Premier League teams now have?
Yes, in answer to the bit about Manchester City, I think that because, as I said, it's kind of a bit more of a cup competition, a team that hasn't settled yet could theoretically do something special in Europe because they're not having to consistently perform. I think certainly next year Manchester City will be in a much stronger position, particularly because John Stones should be sort of more settled in that team. And if they've settled their defence and they're able to defend their way to success as well, you're talking about a team that is capable of winning the Champions League. As for the rest of the English clubs, yes, I think that next season could be kind of the start of a return of English dominance in the Champions League. Because I think the turning point really was the 2009 Champions League final. Because after that, with the exception of Chelsea, the English teams started to fall behind the others. Chelsea, again, on my point of, you know, weaker teams being able to do well in the Champions League, the year they won it, they finished sixth in the Premier League. And they've also gone very far in Europe and been able to match possibly better teams than when, just because they approach the games in the right way. So, and I think that's a mentality about the club, better than the club. So it doesn't matter about the manager so much that they'll be able to go far next year, should they qualify, which they probably will. And as for Manchester United, yeah, they've got someone who's got a pretty good record in Europe at the helm, along with a very good squad, and they'll probably have improved on it by then. So I think those three teams will with a settled squad. I think the year out of Europe will massively help United and Chelsea, because perhaps this year without a settled squad they might not have done so well in Europe, and that might have had a bad effect on team morale or whatever. So perhaps a year out of Europe, obviously United are in the Europa League, but a year out of the Champions League will be helpful, and Manchester City will have a better team next year. So yes, next season is the one to watch for the English clubs. But as for Manchester City this year, they could just string the results together that could already get them very far in the Champions League, because they've got a lot of players who are capable of producing utter brilliance at a moment's notice.
It only takes one moment of magic from Aguero and Manchester City can change the complexion of a game. So it's definitely something to watch out for. As I said, they shouldn't have any issues in that group. We are recording before their game against Borussia Mönchengladbach, but you'd think they should be able to beat them, given the pounding Celtic took off Barcelona last night. You can't really see they pose the same sort of threat they may once have to Manchester City. And as you say, from there it depends on where the draw takes them. If they can get some favourable results against Barcelona and get above them in the group, they may not have to see them again. They Barcelona may end up with an Arsenal draw, getting someone ridiculously tough in the round of 16, maybe Bayern Munich.
Exactly. The Champions League, a lot of it is to do with luck. Obviously, for the super clubs, it's very different because they're so good that they don't need to rely on luck, although look at the draws that Real Madrid got in last season's edition. But yeah, the Champions League, a lot of going far in it, as in any cup competition, is luck of the draw. And then when you don't get a lucky draw and you get someone difficult, you've got to approach the games in the right way. So it's not like a league competition. It's probably not as difficult to win as some league ways. As Brian Clough kind of pointed out, he said he'd much rather win the league than the European Cup, as it was called then. So it doesn't take being the best team in the competition in the slightest to win the Champions League. And teams particularly like Arsenal need to learn that pretty damn quick if they ever want to win it. And as for Manchester City, Manchester United, and Manchester United, they could very easily end up being one of the best teams in it and winning it like that. And Chelsea may not be too far off winning a second Champions League, because they just always come up with the goods in Europe. And I know that I'm not meant to be praising Chelsea as an Arsenal fan, but I really do have a great admiration for the way they go about European games.
I'm going to leave you with one final terrifying thought, Hugo. Arsenal defeat PSG in their final game to top the group, only to find Manchester City have beaten Barcelona to second place, and there's your draw for the round of 16.
Yeah, I was thinking about if that would happen today, and I think I'd probably give up on Arsenal ever winning the Champions League.
The one year you come top, you still end up with one of the super teams.
Yeah, I think if that happened, it would probably be proof that there is the existence of a God, and a God that really, really despises
us. We will leave it there for this week. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, Hugo, for taking time out of your trip to Paris. And I'm glad you enjoyed your Champions League away experience. Please follow us on Twitter at LWOSSuiteFA and on our Facebook page as well. You can follow Hugo on Twitter at... and myself...
underscore Hugo Jennings.
LWOS Rob. Please go to Last Word on Football for all the latest news and analysis from the world of football. And we will see you all next week. Thank you very much.